I want to tell you about a new podcast called Amuse News. Publishing multiple days a week, Amuse News is your source for food news, interviews from around the food world, and more. On the show, we'll be engaging with food storytellers, from chefs to advocates to people working in the field, and many more. Find Amuse News wherever you get your podcasts. Amuse News is a destination for everyone who's looking for a new, insightful look into the world of food.
This episode has been brought to you by Worldwide Soba, a Japanese noodle production company.
This week on Meat and Three, we get ready for Super Tuesday by looking at how food shapes elections both at home and abroad.
People know that you don't order a Philly cheesesteak with Swiss cheese as John Kerry did back in the 2004 cycle.
A young group of friends decided that they would put up a website which told voters which polling booths had sausages.
Prime Minister David Cameron was pictured about a week after this incident eating a hot dog in a bun with a knife and fork because he was so afraid.
Tune in to Meat and Three, HRN's weekly food news roundup, wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hello and welcome to Snacky Tunes. I am one half your host, Darren Bresnitz. This week we are in the Go Get 'em Tiger Clubhouse, aka the new commissary, sitting down with Kyle and Charles, who have spent their entire adult life in the pursuit of the perfect cup of coffee. We take a look back at the start of their business, how they grew it, what they learned in the past, and they share some really intimate insights about what it means to be in business for yourself and how to learn from the mistakes you made and be happy with the success that you find. Then we go deep into the archives to one of our earliest shows and we play a special performance from Bath, who is one of our favorite performers and have been back a couple of times over the years. So sit back, relax, and enjoy Snacky Tunes here on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
We talk about food, we talk about music, with musical dudes, finger on the pulse, Snacky Tunes.
To them and try and get them to come closer.
Thank you.
Hello and welcome to Snacky Tunes. I am one half your host, Darren Bresnitz. We are deep in Vernon? Yeah, edge pretty, of Vernon?
Yeah.
Vernon.
Huntington Park is right there, so yeah. I guess we're deep.
Yeah. How often are you going to El Russo these days?
Oh, I will go every day if I don't, like, limit myself. But it's too popular now, so we're kind of out.
Like, yeah, but, like, on a Tuesday at, like, 9:30?
It's still slammed. It's amazing.
Okay. Well, we are...
That is the best food thing that happened last year.
Oh, yeah. Hands down.
Yeah.
We are with Charles Babinski, Chief Product Officer, and Kyle Glanville, co-founder of Go Get 'Em Tiger, in the... Can we call it a clubhouse?
Yeah, we're in the clubhouse.
Clubhouse warehouse. Yeah. I feel like people who are going to come and be like, oh, it's your clubhouse. You're like, just stay away. We'll invite you for like the opening party. And the people are like, the warehouse, like, okay, come here to work.
Yeah, you could be here.
So it's pretty amazing to be sitting in a giant warehouse of what essentially started as a coffee shop pop-up.
Yeah.
And I want to go back, not to the very beginning, but sort of when you were getting started, when you were thinking after the pop-up, of the coffee shop, what was the plan? Was the plan to do like one artisanal, just it is an icon beacon coffee shop, or were you going for what you have now, which is the multiple locations?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, plans shift over time, and there's been like a trajectory for our plans. I think when we were very like day one talking about doing this business, it was let's build a coffee shop. And we had the sort of benefit of coming from Intelligentsia, where we saw that one single location could be like a great business that, you know, fed your family and took care of the bills and made you feel good. And then, you know, we started the pop-up, and I personally went into that pop-up like pretty arrogant, I guess, like pre-knowledge.
One thought of the arrogance.
I just thought that everybody would be there.
Oh, sure.
I just thought, like, people would write about us and everybody would show up. And remember, like, this is, you know, 2012, right?
Sure.
So this is still kind of before, like, the sort of aggressive spread of fancy-looking coffee shops.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, we felt like we were doing something really different. We were new to the market. And, you know, we would be slammed. But, like, we opened those doors at Squirrel on October 4th, 2012, and it was like a lot of thumb twiddling for a while. And so, you know, whatever our ambitions were going into that, it kind of became survival mode almost immediately. Like whatever savings I had, which was modest, like gone.
And, really?
Oh yeah, quickly.
How quickly into starting a business did you feel that you're like, okay, every money, every penny I have is going into it. And then what does that actually look like? Like, are you being like, we're making ham sandwiches or we're eating leftover croissants?
Yeah. We definitely ate like whatever scraps we could. Leftover pastries.
Sure.
You know, luckily, we started alongside Jessica. And so there was food around.
Yeah. What'd you do with that rice bowl, right?
Yeah. Oh, God, it went missing.
Yeah.
And it was just Charles and I. And I think we were pretty terrified to hire anybody for a long time because that's just like an enormous responsibility to cover that paycheck.
Yeah.
And I think like the coffee was bringing in like $300 a day. And, you know, there's all the costs come out of that, and there's like a few pennies to rub together maybe at the end of that. I mean, for us, really not.
Yeah.
And so it was really terrifying. And so I think maybe right before we opened the pop-up, we're like, we're going to do 100 of these in California. Like, we're just going to be the preeminent boutique coffee company.
Sure.
In California. There's like this, all this opportunity, and, you know, we're like weird and have ideas. And then, you know, a couple weeks into operating in Squirrel, we're like, holy shit, like, our only plan is just to not die. And, you know, and it felt like that for a while. And even when the Jonathan Gold thing sort of, he shined his light on Squirrel, and, you know, we saw like Jessica explode, and, you know, we were still, you know, I think our best day ever was like $1,000.
Yeah. That's a big day though.
Yeah.
In the moment.
Yeah, I mean, not really. Not,
I mean, we came from Intelligentsia.
Sure.
And like the Silver Lake shop would do like a $12,000 Saturday, you know?
Let me just ask for that frame of mind, though. I mean, you're comparing yourselves to what was arguably one of the most established national coffee brands that had even had awareness on the East Coast. Yeah. When did you either stop comparing yourself to them to be like to measure your own success and then start thinking like, okay, like we're not gonna have to eat leftover, you know, pastries and croissants? Was there a moment?
No, I mean, it came a lot later. I mean, realistically, for the first couple of years, I lived off of tips, and there was like a long period of time where the majority of my calories came from Tacos Tomas in Grand Central Market.
Sure.
A $3 taco the size of your hand would more or less feed you for half a day.
Size of your head.
Yeah.
No. Yeah.
And, you know, like $1,000, like it can feel like a lot, but coffee shops are built for volume. And everything, like you can serve 1,000 people off of one espresso machine, you know, with four people, or you could serve 100 people off of one espresso machine with four people. And it really is, you know, like you're not really cooking until you get to that higher and higher volume.
So I want to jump forward a little bit of when you finally opened up the first location. When did it feel that you had established the brand and you could start thinking about expansion?
I think we got a really nice piece of press from the New York Times in June of 2014. And we had already opened two locations because we opened GMB at Grand Central Market and Go Get 'Em Tiger on Larchmont.
Sure, but you had to...
a month of each other.
But at some point you had to pick a lane.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Right? Like you didn't like Go Get 'Em Tiger is the one that's every...
Yeah,
that's
we always had this notion. So the Go Get 'Em Tiger thing kind of fell into our lap. Not the name of it, but that location and that opportunity. And so when we started this other brand, there was intention behind that. It was like, and our original intention was basically like really good coffee is so much about technique and service and a little bit also about like only buying like the upper echelon of ingredients. But if we could like maybe... like scale back on our input costs and do something that actually like hits people a little bit in the middle, like we could create, you know, the first like actually truly sort of mainstream third wave coffee thing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what actually happened is we don't have it in us when we know that there's a better product to buy the cheaper product. It's just not, it's like not in our DNA.
Yeah.
So we had Go Get 'Em Tiger on Larchmont. We had GMB at Grand Central Market and they were essentially the same thing. GMB had like a little bit more experimentation going on. Go Get 'Em Tiger ended up having food and then that kind of scaled up for us. But in the early days, they were kind of the same thing. But the original thought was like GMB is named after us. It's Glanville and Babinski. And like, we're not gonna like make this national presence with our name. With like, that's just not, that's weird. And so.
Right. Especially when people are like, so what, tell me about the name. You're like, well, it's about us.
Yes. The name is our names.
The names are our names.
Yeah. The actual company name is Glanville and Babinski, which sounds like a law firm.
Yeah.
Like, are you injured?
Yeah.
DUI?
Do you want some coffee?
Yeah. So Go Get 'Em Tiger, you know, we thought like, that was like a really memorable name, mm-hmm. and like the concept behind it was really memorable. And we did like lots of like airy space and bright colors, and like we wanted to make it like I think fun and like really palatable to a wider audience. And so that's always been the one where we've been like, you know, if we're going to grow something, that's what it's going to be. But in truth, you know, the first year of those two, both those locations running them simultaneously, like we like ran ourselves into the ground. Yeah. Like we like 7 days a week, literally 16 to 18 hours a day, open one shop midday, flip sides and close the other shop.
Wow.
And we didn't have managers. We didn't have like other leadership in our store. So like bill paying, we couldn't afford a bookkeeper. Like, so bill paying, payroll, like all that stuff was, you know, in our purview. And it was gnarly, like really gnarly.
Is there advice that you would share to people who are just getting started and having multiple locations of any food-driven or coffee-driven business that parts or places where you sacrificed or felt the strain that looking back now, maybe you didn't have to?
We just didn't get enough money. Mm-hmm. I think that was a big thing. We overestimated how much we would have to we underestimated how much we would have to build the loyalty with the customers. We overestimated how hype-driven coffee can be. It's a ritual. It's a daily thing. It's medicine for a lot of people. It's not like a hype-driven business. Mm. And so I think we underestimated how long the work of like getting loyal customers was going to be. I think if we were to do it again, we would start with more cash. We would maybe be a little more aggressive about getting cash.
Yeah. Which at the moment we didn't really.
I've heard about this money thing, the importance of business.
Yeah. Yeah. But when we started with basically no cash. And,
right. Would you have recommended like taking out a low interest loan, or would you have just gone to friends and family and been like, hey, we need a couple thousand?
We did that. We got what we could out of friends.
We got $39,000, yeah, which like got us some equipment.
And sure. Realistically, we didn't have access to a whole lot of money and a whole lot of opportunities, and we took advantage of what we did. It's like, it's funny to think going back, because like we didn't know. Like if we had more cash, we might not even have used it in the most sensible way. And one of the advantages of being a small company, like what Kyle was talking about earlier, about one of us opens one shop, the other opens the other, you switch in the middle of the day. Like at the very least, you can put everything on your backs and kind of carry it where it needs to go.
Yeah.
That is the value of a small company. So
you can let your team go and just work it yourself, you know?
Yeah.
But, yeah.
And there were moments like we had some like really good key staff that we had hired sort of in a fit of like optimism, that we were like, look, you're like, everybody in town will want you to work for them, and like we can't afford you. And so
that's a tough day.
Ooh, yeah.
Did you bring any of those people back when you finally were able to hire people?
No, actually, like, I mean, the biggest one I can think of is Percy, who, like, if I was Percy Ramirez, who's living in San Francisco now, and if I were to like run like a draft lottery board,
oh, yeah,
of like
coffee draft,
he would be number one or number two for me.
Would he get a jersey? Would he get like a Go Get Him jersey?
That's we've designed a Go Get Him jersey. We just haven't pulled the trigger on it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
But yeah. So I think the thing that I would say about anybody going into it, and I really believe, like, if I had known then what I know now, I just wouldn't have the guts to do it.
There is some of that.
You have to be blind.
Blind perseverance.
Yeah.
And then you come to one day and you go like, okay, this is viable.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to take a quick break and talk about the viability and the opening of the second, but first of many additional locations of Go Get 'Em Tiger. We have a song for the archives here on Snacky Tunes on heritageradionetwork.org.
Don't you tell them what to do. Just sit yourself down. And don't do these things to you. Sit yourself down. Tell a bird. How you see right through that tall pride. Is that pride you got? Means everything to you. When I hit you on the knuckle, baby, look me dead in the eye. Watch you see it right through me too.
Tambo solo. You're so good.
Keep your pride and find somebody else.
Room, right, Andy? Ready? Okay.
Leave him be.
Yeah.
Hello and welcome back to Snacky Tunes. We're with Kyle and Charles of Go Get 'Em Tiger. And a big shout out to Erica for bringing the coffee to get us through the second part. So I want to talk about that moment when you decided that you were viable enough to launch a second location to Go Get 'Em Tiger. Knowing that you had just dealt with two locations and you couldn't do probably like multiple swapping all the time going into opening a new location. So what was that moment? When did you finally feel that you had hit enough of at least of a threshold?
I think the precursor to that moment was definitely the press in the New York Times. I cannot really express enough how much that changed our world.
New York Times.
It's the New York Times. I mean, we kind of should have known. I was like, just to give a little like bit of background, I remember like one time before that, the New York Times like sneezed our name on like the back pages of some like roundup like that mentioned Grand Central Market, and we saw an uptick in business.
Huh.
And we were like, and like the LA Times could put us, and no offense to LA Times, but like unless it was Jonathan Gold, like they could put us like on the front page and nobody give a shit. But like New York Times like just like whispers you and it's like a huge sea change. The other one is Westways. It's like incredible.
Really?
Yeah.
Shout out to Westways.
Shout out to Westways. So that article, just to put it into perspective, came out digitally on a Wednesday afternoon at like 1 p.m. And by 3 o'clock, we were fucking sandbagged. Like, we were inundated with customers in a way that we had never been before. And we stood in the same place for basically two straight weeks serving people who had heard that we had the best iced latte in America.
Interesting.
And it doubled our sales overnight.
Now, in the you previously talked about the hype versus ritual.
Yeah.
Of coffiness. Does that taper off after a while?
It's definitely ephemeral. Like, but like it gave us the exposure to people. I mean, getting that first handshake, getting that first opportunity to serve somebody is like, that's the opportunity you need. Like, and so and then you have to prove it and you have to convince somebody to come back.
Yeah. Especially when people are looking for their cup of coffee to define who they are.
Yeah.
Like, I am a fill in the blank, this type of person who drinks this coffee. These are my people. And now
absolutely.
This is my hat of the coffee shop I go to.
I think what the New York Times thing did, though, is it gave people who weren't interested in sort of higher end coffee permission to try this thing out.
Sure, especially when there's so many options and you love coffee, or at least you love the idea of going to a coffee shop. Sometimes you just need to be told where to go.
Yeah.
And when
that's how we all are. Like at restaurants and stuff, right? Like somebody says like All Day Baby is good and you're like, great, like I can go to All Day Baby.
They are.
Yes.
Yes. So when you opened up the second Go Get 'Em Tiger location, were there similar issues, new issues?
New issues.
What were some of the new issues of opening up a second location then?
Well, so that one, we were seeing the success of our food, and so we really wanted to, like, punch that up.
Yeah.
So we hired, like, a real chef, Rhea Dolly, who we worked with at Squirrel, and we put in all the infrastructure, the hood, the grease interceptor. Like, it was no longer, like, a few hot plates and a waffle iron.
Fair.
Like, and people were hyped about Rhea's food. We had kind of like broadcast that this was going to be a really, really special thing. And we definitely were feeling that. Like it was, we weren't just going to do the same thing that we had done before. We were going to do something that like was a little bit more punched up. And we did a private preview. I remember like right before our opening day, invite only. We invited 100 people. Somebody put it on Instagram and we just got slammed before we were ready to serve anybody. And our whole opening first couple of weeks was just pandemonium.
Just going down in the weeds.
Yeah.
Every day.
The new problem was that we like weren't ready for it.
Hmm.
And so we fucked it up.
And did it affect coffee service as well?
Oh, yeah. Because people are getting food and coffee. So,
sure.
I mean, like, if you get your coffee right away and you get your food 30 minutes later.
Or an hour later.
Food and the coffee service is like...
I can already tell you what my visceral reaction to that is.
Oh, yeah.
And I am... First off, I'm not planning for an hour.
Right.
I'm planning to get, like, my biscuit and my coffee in, like, 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And then I'm out in 30,
yeah.
If that.
people were pissed. We had like 3 stars on Yelp, which like just doesn't happen. And like, you know, it was.
How did you adjust? Or what? Or, and let me ask, what sort of mental jiu-jitsu did you have to do to be okay with going through that rough time?
Well, there's no silver bullet, right?
Yeah, you just go through it. Like that's the thing about like falling into the shit is that you're in the shit. Like there's nothing you can do. You just have to work your way out of it. And I think a lot of it came down to like figuring out what our specific approach to food was and what it meant for us, not just from a menu perspective, but from being an employer perspective, you know, how our food program should run. So it was a gradual, like, we worked out the biggest kinks immediately, but I'd say that it took us a couple of years to really get to a point where we felt like we were building, you know, off of sort of our positive wins.
And this is pretty heartbreaking for us, right? Because what I just talked about was getting that first handshake.
Sure.
How important that was. And we had it. We had the first handshake. But people showed up.
Right.
And we fucked it up.
Right. Because then people go like, I'd love to go there, but I don't want to wait for an hour for my food. Let's go somewhere else. And then they go, oh, I like this place enough. And my food comes in.
Yeah.
You know, 20 minutes.
Yeah.
So how do you build that trust back?
I mean, it's a really, really long process, and you just have to nail it. Like, you just have to fine-tune your operations. You know, for us, like, we had things on the menu that we knew had to sit in the oven for 20 minutes. And you have the prep that comes before that, the 20 minutes that it sits in the oven, plus, you know, plating it and getting it out, and, you know, suddenly it's 35 minutes.
Sure.
When we were first starting, right, when it was just the two of us, and something didn't work, we would just look at each other in the middle of a busy service and say, this is going.
Go. 86. Yeah, get out of here.
You add in, like, basically you're giving the keys to the kingdom to somebody else as far as the food program goes. You're becoming a larger organization. You have 3 shops, 4 shops, 5 shops instead of 2 shops. Making those decisions goes from being really, really, really easy to being really, really, really hard.
Mm-hmm. You have to socialize it, and, you know.
Yeah.
Right, because someone's like, I love the peach muffin.
Well, you also don't want, like as employers, it's our job to empower people to feel like they can do their best work and bring themselves to it. And it is defeating to get your thing 86.
Of course. So a few years go by, you figure out the kinks. When does the idea of wider spread expansion start to take place, and how do you put that into action?
Yeah, so it took us a long time, but we had finally, after 4 years in business, we had 3 locations that were operating like really, really well. Like, they were well-oiled machines. All 3 of them were busy. We managed to like eke out a profit. And
fantastic.
Hey, good for us.
Yeah.
We managed to eke out a profit, and I think we've always been very project oriented people. And so I think for us, like, the narrative is less about like world domination and more about like, let's do new stuff. Like,
sure.
We want to do new things. It's like, if you're a band, like, each of these cafes is like an album, right? And so, you know, it's not like we're just like throwing the same DNA into the building and saying like, that's it. Each one is a new release for us, and there's a new idea, or 10 new ideas, or 100 new ideas baked into each one. And like, it just like hanging out and operating is just not, that's just not who we are.
Sure. And so every new location is going to allow for something different.
Hell yeah.
But then how do you balance that with the core identity, where if I'm in a different part of town and I see one of your shops, I'm like, okay, I want to be able to have a similar experience across town.
Well, the core menu is the same.
Sure.
Right? But there's like extra menu items. Mm-hmm. There's like, you know, some of the things that might be different. Sorry for the truck sound.
All good. We're in Vernon. It
We're
happens.
In Vernon. People are trucking.
Yeah.
The difference might be the music center, where we did like the hi-fi thing with Dub Lab, right? And that's really cool because we get to play records all day, and we love playing records all day. Or the Cinerama thing, which is like more pared back and like fun stuff to take into the movie theater. And so, but it's also like, if you come in and say, give me a cortado, there's your fucking cortado. Like, that exists. But we have like, I think the way that we're thinking about it now is like we have this like expanded bin of parts. You know, now there's like a burger in there and like other, you know, breakfast burrito and yep. whatever. And we can kind of plug different things into different cafes depending on what is important to the people that we're serving there. Like if we were to open at a yoga studio, maybe the burger wouldn't be the thing.
or it'd be a Beyond Meat burger or yeah. something a little bit different.
Right. And so like, you know, I think it's really important to us, you know, as we scale Go Get 'Em Tiger to continue to be people's neighborhood cafe. And that means that we take inventory of what matters to people in that community. And we try to reflect the best of that community back at them.
You know, you talked earlier about the handshakes from the New York Times, but now you're getting these handshakes from different communities and community leaders. I know you just mentioned the Arclight Cinema, but to be in, I would say, the most iconic movie theater in all of LA, what does that mean to you? How does that partnership come about? How do you approach something like that? And, you know, how do you not get in your head about going about setting up a coffee shop in a location like that?
I mean, it's just really, really cool. And this is 5 years, I think, in the making. Like, 5 years ago, we, the people who run the Arclight are customers at Larchmont.
Family business, like passed down through generations.
And they asked about like the possibility of us doing something inside, and we went and we looked around, and we walked by the dome, and it was like, what, you know, what's up with these box offices? Like, are they being used? And it's like they were just storage. So the idea was like then and there, like let's have a cafe, let's put a bar out front, and you know that idea sat in the ether for basically 4 years before it ever kind of came to fruition. So more than anything, it's just like an awesome idea that we had half a decade ago that finally gets to happen.
And also like so Arclight is like father and son basically kind of run things, and they still do like a lot of the on the ground decision making, even though now they're like a national chain of theaters. And it was so easy to have ideas with them because usually when you're dealing with like a landlord or like some kind of development, right? It's like, well, everything kind of has to like fit into this box.
How much money you're making per square foot, first, what is the rent and blah, blah, blah.
And, but like for us, at no point when we were thinking about doing this thing at Cinerama were we like, oh, like, I don't think we talked about revenue really once until like right before opening. We're like, what do we think we're gonna do here? Yeah. like are we gonna make any money here? I don't know. But for us it was, and the same is true with the Music Center. It was completely about the soul of the place, what it means to Angelenos, and how we feel like we want to be that company that shows up for that stuff.
Also, we're going to the farmers market on Sunday. We're going to Amoeba. This is like, we're seeing a movie in the dome, when it's like a Paul Thomas Anderson, like 70mm extravaganza. And
we're
all of
clubbing
that,
on Cahuenga till 4 a.m.
Yeah, exactly. We're hanging out at the Romper Room.
And so it's part of your, life. You're a part of the community. Like, you're not some outsider coming in.
Yeah.
And it's a joy. It's like, we get to have the thing that we do be a part of that.
Yeah.
And
I hope that it comes through. Like, all, I think all of our spots, every single shop that we have is like a place that we have like a very close personal relationship with for one reason or another. And what we hope comes through like in those locations is like the actual joy that it brings us to be able to do that thing there.
I mean, what does it mean, and what advice would you give to have that patience for those ideas to come to fruition, especially from getting started to even having success and being like, this is a cool project, it's not going to be viable for 5 years.
Yeah.
I mean, realistically, like, it just looks that way because all of our, like, terrible ideas never came to fruition, right? So
sure.
We've had a million ideas over the course of the 7 years that we've been operating, and only a few of them have kind of made their way out. So
is time a good filter?
Time's a good filter. Take a lot of swings. And let ideas live. Don't dismiss stuff out of hand right away. Like, the notion, like, what we were presented with is, like, do you want to be the coffee shop in the corner of the lobby of Arclight? And it would have been easy to walk into that room and be like, nah.
Right. Be like, no. It's like, yes, we want to work together. Come back. Think on that. And then go back and be like, what about this?
Yeah.
And sometimes when you present a different idea, people go like, oh, I never thought about it that way.
Yeah.
Because we didn't know it could be that way.
Yeah. Or even the Los Feliz shop, which was an apartment and then a tattoo studio and like off the street and like you can't park there. Like,
oh, yeah. That parking was, over there is.
It's gnarly. It's gnarly. Totally underestimated the parking snafus. Oh, I've also watched people get hit on the street.
Oh, yeah.
Although they put in a crosswalk.
Yeah. That area is one of my most beloved areas to go eat and drink.
It's amazing now with the Kismet Rotisserie and everything.
And Homestay and everything. Yeah. And it is the worst parking. But that's how much I love it because I still go to that area.
Yeah.
So beyond
Uber or Lyft.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes.
Beyond the physical expansion, you guys also are doing merch. You have a coffee service program. You have brand awareness and brand extensions that don't rely ultimately on a physical store. What has the importance been to that growth, and how is it important to go beyond just a store?
I think you are probably giving us too much credit for how strategic that stuff is.
Hard-hitting question.
No, I mean, it's because it's right now that's about like the soul and the feel, and the way that the merch came about, like the doing like the new merch stuff, was we had this barista working for us who we realized, because we had her do like a few like postcards, like event things, we're like, you're just a fucking really cool artist, and we just want you to make things for us.
Yeah. I love that.
Yeah. And so it wasn't like, well, you know, like we need to like, you know, build our brand through merch, but like immediately, like we did our first like drop, you know? That's what the kids say.
Right. Before now, every restaurant has merch. Because you guys started a little bit before.
Yeah.
I'll give you credit where credit's due on the record.
Yeah, yeah, appreciate it. I've got the socks on right now. When we did the first drop, we had like 200 of everything, and they just like, psh, it was gone.
Yeah.
It was actually gone before people could write about it. And it was
the
like...
best problem to have.
Yeah, so people really like this. I think doing the like limited run thing where it's like, so that you can like timestamp people's relationships to the company, and like you're out there representing, and it's like you have one of the original blah, blah, blah shirts or whatever. Like that makes people feel good.
Yeah.
And it feels good for us. Like I was just in New York last week, and three times in Manhattan, I saw somebody wearing a Go Get a Tiger hat.
That's three times.
What the fuck? I went to Disneyland I saw people wearing GG, like the coffee hats and the GGT hats at Disneyland. My brother lives in Idaho, and he's like, I ran into another person like wearing it. I don't know how that happens.
I mean, sometimes the hats and the extensions go beyond the physical nature of something.
Yeah.
Because it becomes just something that people like.
Yeah. Oh, I was never a skateboarder.
Yeah.
But I loved the culture of skateboarding. Sure. And the way that, like, I love, like, skateboard fashion. Like, I think that, like, the skaters know things and they are cool. Oh, yeah. And so we, you know, when this started to happen, it was like, we should just operate like a skate company when it comes to, like, all the merch stuff.
I love it.
Yeah.
So as you look to the future, as we sit in the warehouse / clubhouse,
yeah.
What lessons from the past are you going to take into your future growth?
Ooh, that's really good. I mean, there's like 1,000 of them. You know, I think right now, like the last year for us has been a lot about learning how to manage and uplift and motivate a team to carry on your vision. Learning how to communicate that vision really well. Charles, for instance, has like really come into his own as like a person who can like actually set very clear goals for groups of people to achieve. And I've maybe come into my own as like a little bit more of
Charles,
a like,
anytime you want to tell me how I've come into my own.
Yeah. Go ahead. That's your cue, Charles. No. I mean, but like, you know, and I've felt a little bit more free to just be like, what's next and, like, what are we doing next?
A little time to dream.
Yeah. Like, this last store that we opened, like, I showed up in the last week, you know, and, like, they did the things that we talked about doing, which was amazing.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, lessons that we've learned.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it just, like, right now, our world, owning a business has been just relentlessly learning lessons and never getting to not learn lessons. So it's almost like a funny thing to think, like that there's, like, a tipping point at any moment, because the second you move on from one thing, you're into a whole other world. And when, you know, I think we sit down and think about where we were a year ago, we thought we knew a lot and we were fools. And, you know, if you think about where we were 2 years ago, it's the exact same thing. And a lot of that has to do with the fact that both of us are driven towards, like, constantly evolving this thing that we're putting our lives into. So it's kind of the nature of what we do, the craft, and what we're passionate about. But I think that's just what, you know, being an owner of a company is. And at a certain point, I think it went from being, like, you know, the challenges of, like, oh, we're just getting started, like, we have to just work these 20-hour days or these 18-hour days, to, oh my God, we have to figure out how to manage people, to, you know, the next 20 years of our lives is just going to be learning things. And getting to, like, I think right now what it feels like is we're starting to feel comfortable riding those waves, and we're starting to feel comfortable with all of the changes. And that's pretty exciting.
Yeah. I mean, I think, like, the thing that we've always known how to do is fail a lot. And what we've gotten better at is failing quickly.
Yeah.
And moving on. And so, like, people don't, like, I, you know, even, like, our most regular customers, like, you could catalog, you know, like, all the dumb shit that we've done, or, like, all the new stuff that we've rolled out that hasn't worked or whatever. But, like, what we've gotten good at is just, like, recognizing, like, okay, this doesn't stick, like, move on.
Great. And that's something that we were good at when we were a small business.
Yeah.
Like, when it was just us, like I said, like, we would make those decisions really quick. It was that transition to being, you know, somebody who's, like, teaching people who are in the positions to make the decisions, and setting an institutional standard of assessing our successes and our failures and moving on. That was, like, a multi-year transition.
Amazing. Well, I want to thank you guys so much.
Thank you.
Congrats.
Thank you.
If people want to check out all the goings-ons, where can they go?
They can go to our shops. I mean, if you go to our website, ggt.com, you can see where all of our locations are. We have a good Instagram feed. We have a mailing list. You should join.
Sweet.
And, drink good coffee. Either have it with us or, support another good coffee shop locally.
Wonderful. Well, thank you guys. We have another song from the archives and then a live performance here on Snacky Tunes on heritageradionetwork.org.
This episode has been brought to you by Worldwide Soba, a Japanese noodle production company. Founded by Shuichi Kotani, Worldwide Soba offers noodle consulting services in addition to supplying a variety of tools for wannabe noodle makers. Want to take a class? Worldwide Soba has it. Need a traditional Japanese soba knife? Worldwide Soba has that too. To learn more, visit worldwide-soba.com.
I don't know if I've ever seen or heard such like a driving vocal performance from Anthony that they're always like off into space, some ethereal thing, but that is a Who Might Feel So Free. It's a men's song featuring Anthony, and then before that was Matt Pompier. Summer is coming, because it is. I'd like to...
As it is.
It is a fact.
It's a fact. Guess what's also coming? Winter, fall, all that stuff.
I know, but we're already in winter. We'd like to welcome to the show, Baths.
Hey.
How can we refer to you in the show, though, if I...
I'm Will.
Okay.
That's fine.
I'm going to embarrass you for like 2 seconds.
That's fine.
My friend, our good friend, Shelly, who's been on the show before.
Hello.
She said during CMJ, she's like, you got to come see this band with me. Bass, and I said okay, and then I saw you like at 3 times. Now I'm gonna stab
fan
you
out.
Yeah, now this is the best stalk away. It's like, come on, radio show.
let me ask the hard-hitting question first. Which do you prefer more, showers or baths?
It depends on the situation.
That is actually the correct answer. If those of you who have not seen your setup, it's an MPC player.
It's an MPD thing. The thing itself is pretty empty. All the stuff is in the computer, and then attach that to the computer, and then I'm singing along with it. But it's like, I have to sing and be really there and in the room and like active and stuff. So
yeah, as a laptop DJ and knowing like what I'm doing, you are incredibly involved. It's a nice setup with some lights and a little blanket or I don't know, a tablecloth.
Yeah.
But it's like, I mean, you are really like, you're in it and you're tweaking knobs and I watched, cause the first time I was like, all right, guy.
Yeah.
With your knob tweaking. And then by the third time I was like, all right, guy, with that knob tweaking. This is pretty amazing. And it looks very involved. And I definitely think that, like, outside of the voice, like, if you weren't up there, that those noises would not be made. So, yeah. How long did it take to perfect that show? Because you were so involved in that show.
Well, it's a game. It's constant. It's not, I don't even think it's perfected at this point. But it's, like, it's gotten to a point where I'm very comfortable with it. I'm doing fairly simple things. Like, I have all the songs that I'm performing split up into 4 sections, and I'm affecting them as I go and sort of like changing the rhythms and dropping things out so that they're more affecting when the vocals come in, all that type of stuff. Like, I'm doing a lot of it on the fly. A lot of it is improvisation, but it's like...
So every show's different?
Yes, every show is always different.
It's really was like one of my favorite things, and also kind of inspiring because we write music, and I was like, hey, I just saw this guy who did this thing is obviously very like one man show electronic based, but it definitely looks like he didn't get up yesterday. It was like, gonna perform a show.
That's the best thing is like after I perform, somebody's like, yo man, whose music was that? That was so cool. Like they think I was DJing somebody else. It's like, God.
Do you have any thoughts to expand your life show to more than just you?
Absolutely. That's the whole plan. That's the whole goal is that this is where it is right now because I'm by myself. This record was built completely me on my own, and that's the sound of it, and that's the performance that I wanted. But that's specifically this album. The next album that I'm working towards and what I've done in the past is with a large band setup. Like, for one of my older projects, I had, like, a cellist, a bassist.
Oh, cool. And you have a side project that's performing tomorrow night at Glasslands?
Yeah, I'm writing the set today and tomorrow before the show.
So what's the name of that
group? Geotic.
We're not here to talk about Geotic. We're here to talk about Bath.
Yeah.
Hard-hitting question. Ready?
Yes.
What would you like to be served in a bath? Like, what would be the ideal meal?
Oh man.
No, that's a real thing. That's like a gummo type of question.
Like, peppermint water and gum, like cleansing things, like a lot of tea, maybe.
Not like a steak?
No, absolutely not like food.
Really? Because I went like, I would like a steak with like some french fries in a bath.
What if you drop it though? Then so everything gross. Is over. Everything
the
is
idea
ruined.
Let me put it this way. If I'm at the level of where I'm getting dinner served to me in the steak, I have already solved the how to not drop food
problem. I'm going to be honest. I don't think you have to be that well off to get a dinner in a bathtub.
I have eaten a bowl of hot spicy chili in the bath.
color commentary now taken over by Alan.
A hot, rich meal inside a bath. I'm with you. Something effervescent, something like light. And
yes, absolutely. Like one of those whipped desserts that tastes like clouds, whatever. No. I forget what it is.
Oh, actually, nice big ball of cotton candy in the bath.
No, I don't know. I can't. I'm terrible with food. I don't know.
What do you eat on the road? What do you normally, what's your go-to?
I can't admit it. Come on, show.
You can't. No, you can't.
Basically, like this store, I've been having a lot of the McDonald's oatmeal that they introduced because it's like healthy, very fast.
And with the Vermont maple syrup, which actually has to come from Vermont.
Yes.
And have you had any of the Zagat number one rated KFC chicken?
No, I have not. Is that true?
Yeah. No, dude, we did research on it because like KFC now has all these ads like Zagat number one rated, and, but they did like a fast food survey. So it's like, all right, so of the worst, this is the best.
Wow.
Yeah. So, you know, congrats. Congrats. KFC. We'll be having the Colonel on next week to talk about the big win.
Yeah.
Oh, he's what? He's oh, never mind. You know, it's great. You've been how long has Bath's been the Bath project been active?
Since September of 2009.
Okay,
exactly.
So not that. So a year and some change.
Yeah, it was basically like I saw one show specifically in Los Angeles where a lot of the big sort of electronic music players in LA, like Daedalus, Flying Lotus, No Such Thing, Tokyo Monster, all these people played, and I had that full band setup that I was talking about at the time. But I saw that and I desperately wanted to be able to pull a show off by myself in a similar fashion. And it was literally that day I said to my friend Mario, I was like, I want to do that. I want that. And then I built the album over the next couple of months to fit that performance, that type of thing. And then everything started happening.
What programs do you write in?
I used to use Digital Performer a lot, but now I use a mix between Digital Performer and Ableton because Digital Performer is sort of archaic.
Got it.
Yeah.
That was for our techies. Let's get some music going. Hold on a second. I got a few more questions. I really do.
I know, but we can come back.
But I was one question. Because just one thing.
Why are you taking your pants off?
Yeah. That's actually more just a fact. It happens. So you've been around for, like, you know, say a year and a half. I feel like, you know, from CMJ on, you've really begun to hit. You're like in the cusp. You've sold out shows. So like, how are you feeling the difference now, changing from, you know, just like, hi, I'm Bass, to being like people's perception of you?
I have no idea. It's like things are happening so fast that I don't really keep track of it. I'm just sort of, I just keep saying hi.
That's Lior's job, the press agent who's here.
He's the one who's far more aware of my life like that than I am. So.
Great. So you picked out some songs to play.
Now we're ready?
Now we're ready.
Okay.
I had a question.
Okay.
It was pressing. Now I'm going to press play on the songs that you selected. Any type of theme that we should know about?
No, it was literally like I grabbed it and chose the first things that came to mind.
Oh, you have this is great.
Oh, on the
I
fly.
Love the books.
Oh, cool.
So we're going to open up with one of your songs.
Okay.
Well, that's what you put first.
What song is it called?
Somerset?
Yes, okay.
It is yours, right?
It's on something I'm selling on tour, exclusive to the tour. So.
Okay, so we'll talk about it afterwards. This is we're going to keep eating. We have so much pizza and
so
cookies.
So much pizza.
Pizza and cookies here. You're listening to a Bath's hand-selected On the Fly playlist on Snacky Tunes. We'll be right back. And that was just a playlist put together by Will, a.k.a. Bats, as we all put ourselves into pizza and cookie-induced comas.
Yeah, we really never, I have to tell you guys, like, we really never eat this much food.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
And I would like to tell you that every week we eat this much food.
All right, we normally don't have cookies, which are delicious.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. Oh, what do we say about phones? So close.
No.
No.
No. I'm trying to be a jerk about it.
Trying to be a jerk. It's not even working.
Oh, there it is.
There it is.
Is it important?
Heritage.
Is it important?
Not really.
So whoever is calling at 258, Alan, it's record on the podcast. Yeah. Not that important.
Not that important.
I was trying. I mean, it's more important than either of you two guys. Yeah. But then.
Hey, we're like, thank everybody coming snacking. So we'll talk to us about some of that music.
Oh, okay.
How it inspires you as an artist.
I can't even remember what songs did we do.
We
started off with the Books one.
Yeah, but you don't think it was on shuffle, so I don't even think we went in order.
Okay, well, I know if it's a cool point, the Books, one of the best shows that I've ever seen in my life was seeing the Books at the Getty Museum in LA, which was a total surprise.
That's pretty amazing.
It was before I had fully dove into them and everything, and I saw it, and they said themselves at the show that it was one of their favorite shows and favorite venues that they
It's really nice when you can really it's funny because I saw the Books here and they said it was one of their favorite I think it's really
awkward.
Nice when you can see a band and you can tell that they're having a great time.
That's
only times
was.
You see a band and you're like, that was great, and they're like, oh, we played the crap.
Yeah,
do you know what,
yeah,
exactly. Well, keep it to yourself, man.
Yeah, exactly.
When I saw you the three times, and this is where it gets really creepy and fanny,
go
you really did look like it, each time was like you were having the best time. And not only that, you were incredibly appreciative of the crowd.
Yeah.
And like so happy that they are with you every minute. And that's why I told Darren, I was like, hey, you got to come see this guy with me. Cause it's one of like, I mean, I feel like I've seen so much music, and for CMJ, you just become like so numb to it. So
yeah.
I saw you in Brooklyn Bowl.
Oh, cool.
I was 10 sheets to the wind. I had a blast.
Did you wait? They took care of your Brooklyn Bowl. They're one of the best. What did you eat when you were there? Do you remember?
God,
fried chicken.
So just whatever it was, I had too much. I remember that.
Yeah,
it's also the correct answer for Brooklyn Bowl.
It's also like I want all this food, but it's tricky because do you eat it before and then it's like. I just had
no. That's the thing
rings.
Is in life. In life, I don't eat 4 hours before a show so that I'm completely empty.
That's the magic. Clear. That's the magic number. Most people put it between 3 and 4 hours before they play a show. They don't eat.
Yeah. I will be eating wings at like 10 minutes up to it. I'll be like, I do not feel good about jumping around,
dude. I'm yelling so much that it's like if there's anything in my system, it's like the whole time
is
horrible.
And we're gonna leave you with that quote. No, just kidding. So what can people couldn't expect coming up from the world of baths? Marble, granite, porcelain, what are we talking?
So many releases this year. A 7-inch I have coming up, and then stuff I'm selling on tour, and then the new album is probably 2012. I haven't started working on it
2012?
Yet. 2012?
Yeah. Yeah, that
not
happens.
This year. Not this
tomorrow.
Year.
We're already, yeah. Yeah,
my,
yeah.
Tomorrow?
Dude, in the press world, Leo, come on, back in the press, yeah, it's like.
Before the world ends.
2015 over here.
Yeah, it's 2015. So, you remember when bands used to put out like a new album every 4 months?
Yeah. We just woke up this morning and Pitchfork apparently announced that Radiohead has a new album coming out in a
this
week.
No, coming out this weekend.
This weekend.
And a new radio.
Talking about?
When was their last album, though?
See, I love that.
A week ago?
They don't need hype. Come on, man.
No. Dude, if you're them, they don't need hype.
You're Radiohead.
Oh, I wonder if it'll do well.
That's sort of the game.
Yeah.
They played a game on the last one, and they're playing a game on this one by having a one-week press campaign, and that's it.
Are they playing the same game about Pay What You Want for this one?
No. They're not, but they're calling it a newspaper. I don't know.
They're calling it a what?
A newspaper album. That was I just read the article.
What does that mean?
10 minutes ago.
Oh, did they?
I think it's something like they're giving it away on a newspaper, or like in a newspaper, and then they're going to be repackaging it. I heard something about repackaging in May. I don't know the details, but like they're doing like a full thing down the road.
Hey, the second it goes digital, it
well,
doesn't.
I mean, that's what's happening is it's going to be digital in a week.
Yeah,
or weekend. So.
All right. So the show this Wednesday is sold out. And awesome. So
dear
that's great.
Thank you for listening.
You can't go. If you want to be ahead of the curve, you can come see your side project tomorrow at Glasslands.
Yes, I'm writing an entire set tonight and tomorrow.
What do you mean you're writing an entire set?
Like from scratch, I'm making a set.
But you put is your original music for that.
That's what I mean. It's like I'm writing original
in
music.
In comedy, this
tomorrow.
Would be referring to as the new hour. You're writing your new hour.
I guess so.
Yeah. All right. Okay, great. So the last song we're going to play is a Lollipuna track.
Yes.
Wait, hold on. Yeah. Nuts and Bolts. Where we find you on the internet.
Oh, yeah. Do you want Leo to do this?
Well, every single social networking website, it's /bathsmusic. BATHSMUSIC.
Leo, anything you want to add? I mean, this is your chance, man.
I really got nothing over here. I don't know how I got roped into this, but...
remember, every time you sign that check, it's the I got nothing.
yeah.
I got nothing. Oh, yeah. How'd we do last time, Mr. I got nothing?
Can we go back to food?
Yeah.
Hold on. What is your favorite thing to eat when you get off stage?
Thai iced tea. That's not fine. That is also a correct answer.
Hey, just to let you know that you you went you batted 1,000 today.
Yeah, you answered everything correctly.
Awesome. So let's thank you, Jack Inslee. Thank you, Heritage Network. We got a big announcement coming. Is it next week? Is
there something like that? Alan,
great.
Yes.
And
I was good.
I forgot to ask. Who's putting the book out?
We are debating between publishers at the moment.
Awesome. That is also the correct answer. Everyone does so well. Yeah, everyone does so well at the show. And we did pretty well. Just a couple bites left of pizza.
Can we thank Heritage for the rack of ribs they gave us?
Oh, yeah, Heritage. We had a meeting with the head of Heritage, Patrick, and he said, you guys want to take anything? Because you guys don't know, but Heritage background is it's a food company.
They give us 2 sacks of stew meat, a ham hock, and some ribs.
Yeah. What has your radio station done for you? So it's going to be a wonderful dinner.
A porky spring.
Yeah.
Next week, super excited. Alan, you're a good buddy, Jordana Rothman.
Jordana Rothman.
Oh, Jordana Rothman. So for all those who don't know,
I just had dinner with her at Goat Town in the East Village, which we cannot recommend.
Oh. And guess what? I love it because
Goat Town feels that is the incorrect answer.
I really love talking to Jordana about food. Her wit and her remarks are always they make me titter.
Jordana was my assistant.
Oh, really?
Put out the Festivus book. Yeah. Jordana helped me make Festivus shrimp impaled on mini Festivus poles.
Her wit is her wit is from a different era, and I love it.
But just so you know, for any of you Snacky Tune listeners and podcast fans, Jordana was on a year ago predicting food trends.
She was on twice. You have to remember. So there was one where she was on by herself and one with Mark Pastor. The one where she was on by herself, she did a prediction of 2010.
And so this is the year after follow-up, which I am surprised it's been a year. So if between now and then, if you want to go to our podcast, Snacky Tunes, and look for Jordana Rothman to brush up on it, as we will as well. And then we will just have an hour-long food special next week for predictions of 2011, even though
No music.
Just food. We're going to talk. Jordana is worth the hour.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh. All right, this guy seemed all right, but whatever.
Wow. All right. Phone call not important and a bit of a bum out.
No, it's just that there's so much.
Jordana's wonderful, and you guys will have a great show.
Yes, thank you. And I won't say this, that I've gone back to listen to the show. She got a lot right.
All right, well,
save it for... We can wait. We waited.
Spoiler.
Save it for the sequel.
All right, so here we go. Thank you for listening. We'll be back next week with Jordana Roth, and this is See the Wood for the Trees bonus track? Bonus track off what?
The new Lollipop album.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah. Anything? Terry?
That's
Bring It On Spring. Thank you.
watch your step, can't you see the way?
Talk about food, we talk about music, with musical dudes, finger on the pulse, Snacky Tunes.
This program is powered by Simplecast.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Heritage_Radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks.
Hey, are you hungry? Well, you're in luck. Meat & 3 is back for season 16. I'm Taylor Early, and we've got a whole new batch of reporters I am so excited to introduce you to.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth Fisher.
Asha McElroy.
Sam Girardi.
Jessica Gingrich.
Hannah from Wisconsin.
I'm a swing dancing audio engineer.
I am a future registered dietitian nutritionist.
I'm from New York and I love rice and beans.
My favorite food of all time is a shrimp burrito.
I love watermelon.
We've also got a bonus podcast for you called Behind the Internship. Three of our reporters will take you along to show how they develop stories for this very show, Meat and Three.
Hi, I'm Danielle Flitter, a plant-based chef from Philadelphia, living in Mexico City.
I'm Sophia Hooper. I'm a bartender based in Portland, Maine.
My name is Addison Austin Liu. I am a chef and food journalist from Salt Lake City, Utah, and my favorite food is Peruvian.
Rice and beans.
Hand-drawn noodle soup.
So tune in to enjoy a square meal for your ears. And I hope you saved a little room for dessert.